welcome to the weekly service-based forest calls. The intention of these calls is to create a space to listen to one another and to learn from engaging thought leaders in the broader service-based ecosystem around interesting themes. I am your host, Rahul, and I'm calling in from Berkeley. And our guest, the speaker this week, is Shirin Chobani, who's got a remarkable story of transcending and transforming her own personal story. And that's actually the theme for our call this week, is transforming our story. So our seed questions to sort of kick off the conversation are, you know, what are the stories that you've told about who you are or how you are or who you want to be? And how do we transcend our past stories and courageously start telling a new story? And I wanted to, you know, again, our format here is going to be that we're just going to have an open conversation between Devin, Shirin, and myself. And for those who are on the call, if you'd like to join in that conversation and share your own story, press *6 to get into the queue. And you know, Devin, Shirin, you know, to start this off, I'd like to share a kind of interesting story of that I heard last night. I actually watched this film that was about a Tibetan Rinpoche. So this was a very elderly, respected Tibetan Rinpoche who even was a teacher to the Dalai Lama. And he passed away, and then, you know, one of his disciples, about 4 or 5 years after he passed away, identified a boy and said that this boy was the reincarnation of that Rinpoche. And so, you know, the boy, the family was informed, and then some years later, when he was, you know, still probably under 5, they came to just sort of offer him gifts and to basically take him away to the monastery and start training him. And he was told from the time that he was a young boy that he is the reincarnation of this very respected, very revered lama, you know, this Rinpoche. And what was interesting is that the film followed him over the course of, you know, 15 years from the time that he's just a little boy to, you know, now he's in his early 20s, perhaps, through various stages of training. And, you know, it's a rather, from one level, it's a rather inspiring story to be told about yourself. You know, it's like, wow, you're this special person that has a purpose, a high purpose in the world, and you're gifted in ways you don't even recognize yet. And what was interesting to me, that, you know, what came out in that story is how even that story was limiting. You know, this boy felt like a tremendous sense of pressure around how he was supposed to be, and a huge amount of expectation around, you know, what he's supposed to do in the world. And, you know, I guess it just drove home the point of the theme of this call around how these stories we tell about ourselves are just limiting in many ways. And perhaps, you know, that core aspiration is to really be able to consciously control our own story. So, you know, Devin, I'd love to hear what you have to say about that. And Shirin, we want to make this a conversation in the early part, as well as allowing other folks on the call to join that conversation by pressing *6. But maybe I'll pass it over to you, Devin, to share a thought.
Sure. So I couldn't agree with you more, actually. Speaking from my own experience, when I'm very busy, and that happens to me from time to time, when I'm literally running around, it's almost like running from one base to the other, just trying to touch base, I realize that I'm tired, not from the running, but tired because sometimes in the hectic pace of life, I feel that I'm missing something that is like I truly need for nurturing myself, for nourishing myself. And what I have learned over time is that it's basically, I just need to think about myself, and I need to take a pause, and I need to listen to the voice from inside. And It's so difficult sometimes to make time for it. But that story of my life, anytime that I can quiet myself and I'm able to collect my thoughts, I get a voice from inside. I get answers from inside that actually is cutting down my hassle and my running around. And that is making me feel good. And so, story of my transformation, if there is one day, it's about listening to the voice from inside and following through and acting on it. And Shirin, feel
Interesting.
free to chime in here because I am so inspired with the stories that I have read on your magazines. But for me, when I'm following through on my voice, sometimes where I am in the context of it's just not easy. There is a fear, there is a preconceived notion that here is how I should be doing it. And it's just that connection inside is not coming out clearly for me. And that's where I think my challenges are, and that's where my story of transformation is going to come from. Like, how do I overcome that? And so that's my thought here on
Thank
it.
you.
But go
Thank
ahead,
you,
Shirin.
Rahul and Devan, for sharing. Firstly, I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me here. I'm so grateful to be here with you guys talking about my story and listening to your stories. Rahul, it's so interesting that you mentioned the story about this Tibetan boy because just like maybe a week or 10 days back, a friend of mine actually talked to me about a ceremony that she attended where they were getting another 5-year-old boy ready to go off to Tibet and right here in Seattle. And he has also been, told that he's the reincarnation of a, I forget exactly who that was, but he is 5 right now, and the ceremony was about getting him ready to go to Tibet. And she's another mom friend of mine, so she was talking about the mother and father and how they were going through their own process of letting go and having the faith that, my son is the reincarnation and he does need to go. So I was just struck that you mentioned the same story that I heard a week back.
Yeah.
I would like to rephrase one thing you said slightly. You were saying that our stories can be limiting, and I'd like to rephrase that as I think all our stories have their own place. Like right now, maybe that is the right story for him, that he does need to go to Tibet and figure out whether that's him and do that for himself. I feel like we have all these stories that we are told or we tell ourselves, but they each have their own place, and it's up to us to figure out when we are ready to really question those stories and say, do I still want to keep this? Do I want to discard it? It's my own choice every single day. And Devin, like you said, for me too, being a busy mother of two and, doing my work at Flying Chickadee, it is hard to make time for those questions. And not only is it hard to make time, it's hard because at least in my case, there's multiple voices, there's so many stories. It's like, what do I do? What do I keep? What do I throw away? What am I done with? So I would like to say that transforming our stories is not a one-time thing. It's not, I had an old story today, I discarded it, tomorrow I have a new one and that's it. No, I think of it more as an ongoing process where you have a choice every day. It's kind of exciting to wake up and say, who do I want to be today? Today I'm going to be a mom. Tomorrow I'm going to be an editor. Within the same day, I put on all these multiple caps and keep transforming my story. So I like to think about it as more like writing away your stories or discarding your stories that you feel, I've carried this one for quite some time. I'm ready to move on from this. Now I don't. This doesn't sound like me anymore. I'm done with this story. Let's drop it.
Yeah,
So
that's a very interesting distinction to make, Sharon. Thanks so much for that, and I definitely resonated with what you said around how stories don't have to be limiting, but each story has its place, and that it's really about skillfully choosing the place in which that story is appropriate. And as I was thinking about that's something that another friend had said recently, about how, you know, creation itself is an act of limitation, right? It's like this metaphor of like a clay pot versus a lump of clay, right? Like it's really a lump of clay. If you want to create a clay pot, well, you've limited it from being something else, but that need not be the final story, right? That's that's just as malleable into the next thing. So very interesting insight. And for those on the call, if you want to kind of join this fishbowl style conversation and have an insight around the transformation of your own story or something that pops up, please press *6 to get in the queue and join that conversation. And I know, Devend, you were about to say something. I apologize for interrupting.
No worries, Rahul. So building on what you just said, Shirin and Rahul, I actually read one of the magazines of Courageous Curiosity, Courageous Creativity. And for all of our callers, Shirin, our guest speaker today, is one of the editors for this monthly magazine. And the magazine has number of different themes around creativity. And Shirin, when I was looking at your February issue, it's about storytelling, actually. And one statement that stuck with me yesterday when I was reading is, from your editor's note, by the way, is that conscious storytelling offers an incredible opportunity. We suddenly realize that we create our own stories, and our stories create us. So to change ourselves, we can simply change our stories. And when I read that, I was like, wow. And let me reread that for our callers. Conscious storytelling offers an incredible opportunity. We suddenly realize that we create our own stories, and our stories create us. So to change ourselves, we can simply change our stories. I love it so much, and when I read it, actually, I have goosebumps on it, because now I feel like I am in the driver's seat, and I am responsible for creating my own story. It feels good in that, hey, I'm in the driver's seat. It also brings weight to it that, hey, I need to do that now. So, but I love it. It's like way back when I read Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective Habits. And his second habit is about begin with end in the mind. And he's almost saying that you have a mission, you have a vision for your life, and it comes from inside. Just ask yourself from inside. And then he's actually going very dramatic there. And he's like, imagine that it's your funeral, 60 years, 80 years down the road, or 40 years down the road, how long ever that is. But he's like, what would you like people to say about you? Are you liking what you're hearing? And when I read that, I got scared, actually, because I had no idea what people could say about me, first of all. But then it made me think, actually, like, what do I actually want to do? Like, what will I call a success in my life? And I'll be very honest, Rahul and Shirin, it's easier said than done. I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball and just the answer would come out. But it's my story. It's like I constantly ask myself, what is the best use of my time, my relationships, my energy, and where should I focus and what should I achieve and become?
Yeah. David, you actually hit upon the crux of what we do at Flying Tickety. It is all about conscious storytelling. It's all about saying we have the power to create our own stories. And, you know, whether it's through our magazine, through all our books that we publish, through the workshops that we do, it's all about telling our workshop participants or, you know, witnessing and becoming, teaching them how to become aware that, you know, it's all in your hands. You can decide which story you want. We literally have them draw out possibility maps of different stories they can identify with or they would like to identify with and say, hey, what if you dropped everything else and chose this one? What if you decided you like three of them and just choose one every day? For example, for me, one of the biggest ones, you know, that was hard was, so we started flying Chickadee about 5 years ago. And for me, taking, so just to give a little bit of context, I had before that worked in the software industry for about 13 years. And then when I became a mom, I took a little bit of a break. And then my business partner and good friend, Shahana Dutta Gupta, wrote her first book, her short story book. It's called 10 Avatars. It's a beautiful collection of short stories. And I, at that time, decided that I would really like to help edit her book. And I had no experience with editing. I just loved stories. And I took that on and really, really enjoyed that process of working with her and the process of editing. And then we decided this is a lot of fun. We need to keep doing it. And I, before we knew it, we were, you know, filing paperwork for Flying Chickadee with both of us. We were coming up with this idea of this magazine where we had no idea where our contributors are going to come from. What are the themes going to be? What are the stories we're going to do? Nothing. We just dived in because it was fun and it felt like that's what we want to do. So slowly over time, first issue, second issue, you know, people would ask me, so what do you do? My stories had been, I used to be a programmer, now I'm taking a break. Right now I'm a stay-at-home mom. So like all these stories, and I wouldn't feel confident with just saying I'm an editor or I'm the co-founder of a business or I have, you know, so it was an interesting process for me to first figure out what is it that I want to be known as or what is it I think of myself as. And I played around with lots of answers. Every opportunity I got when someone would say, what do you do? I'd experiment and try out different things to see which one feels good, which one feels right. And I landed with, I tell stories. So that's what I stuck with. That felt authentic. That felt true to me at that time. And it still does because it's broad and it covers my role as a mother. I tell stories to my kids all the time. I tell stories with the magazine. And, you know, so just realizing that if I can take ownership of my story, that's what the world is going to think of me. It's all in my hands. But I really need to be happy with the story that I'm telling. I need to feel that that's my real story. And that's my power. Like, nobody else has that. I have that power to create my own story. And it's really fun once you realize that. And to also think about it as something not so heavy. You know, one of the big things that we try to do in our work here is use lightness and use humor. Use a lot of lightness.
Sure.
Whenever anything gets too heavy, we're like, okay, something's not right here.
Yeah, that is so true.
Yeah, one quick thing I also wanted to add is often we think about, you know, growing, like we have to add more or we have to learn a lot more to find our story or to become this person who are. We have to grow, we have to add. And Shahana and I at Flying Chickadee actually really think about it more as shedding and editing. So while editing stories, we realize that, you know, that it's the same thing where you're also editing what it is that you've learned that really isn't what you really think. Like, you know, we believe that we already know what we need to know when we're born as children, and then we've taken on all this stuff. So it's more a process of unlearning or editing or shedding rather than augmenting and growing.
That's very interesting that you share that, Shirin, because the two things jump out at me. One is that, you know, our most pervasive stories that we tend to tell about ourselves in the West are revolve around our professional work, right? It's you know, our resume. When people ask, you know, what we do or who we are, there's a strong temptation to answer with our resume. And it's sort of contrasting with what Devin was talking about, which is that this question around beginning with the end in mind, or even coming to a process of shedding, in some ways is about like the eulogy, right? It's about the stuff that doesn't make it on the resume. It's about the quality of who you are and how you are, and essentializing that into, you know, a value or an action around a value, like I tell stories, right? And I guess that's such a, there's a quote that says that wisdom, you know, wisdom is a process of removing things, not adding things. And, you know, that was just what was striking me as you were sharing this idea around shedding.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you for that insight.
Great. Sharon, I would love to – go ahead. Go ahead.
Sorry, Devin. You go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was just going to add that Shahana's book, she has a book called You Are Michelangelo and You Are David, and that's what the whole book is about. It's about awakening the creative and creation within you. All of our work is centered around, we believe that, you know, your creativity is within you. It's not something you're going to learn or acquire. It's all there, and it's about awakening that within you, finding that. So you are Michelangelo and you are David. And that book pretty much has, you know, all the insights and things that we use at our work.
Sure.
Go ahead,
David. Yeah, I'm going to pick your brain a bit more on that workshop that you mentioned, Shireen, in just a bit when we started our conversation. But when you talked and mentioned about stories and all, Tony Robbins, one audiobook that I listened to recently just came to me. The name of the book is Shape Your Destiny. Mm-hmm. And he has this thing, he's calling it virtues. And he's saying virtues is another word for values or emotions, which are the basic building block of our, he's calling building block of our characters. But it's like you ignore them and then it's so difficult to transfer yourselves. But then here's the thing that again connects me back to what you are saying, Shireen, and that is we learn how to live life using stories. And stories teach us that certain ways of living life are rewarding and some other ways of being pain. And so what happens over time is whatever that worked for me in the past, I'm going to do more of that. And whatever that brought pain to me in the past, I'm going to avoid that. But then it could happen that along the way, you could actually pigeonhole yourself in shutting down other things that might come along the way and that could be useful. But hey, that's a bad thing. I got burned from it before, so I rather not go. And so I could be shutting down a whole slew of possibilities just because of my preconceived notion is it's not good for me. And not good for me is, I think, my ego or my worry or fear. That is saying that it didn't go so well for me last time, I better avoid it next time. So it's so true. I mean, it's like going along with what you said as well, Rahul. It's like, I mean, how do we go about transforming the story? And that is so inspiring for me about today's theme. But you're going to add something to that, right, Rahul?
Well, you know, what was jumping out at me about what you were saying earlier, Shireen, is that, you know, the lightness that you were talking about, the way in which we hold on to these stories, and, you know, that there's a freedom in it, a livelihood in just sort of being able to sort of skillfully pick up a story that serves and lightly holding on to it, then letting go of it, you know, the next moment. And it occurs to me that, you know, one of the core challenges I see around this process is that most of our stories, most of us don't hold lightly to our stories. You know, they're ones that have been really drilled into us for a long time. And they're ones that we start believing ourselves, you know, and we really are, they have so much momentum in our lives. It's very hard to just, you know, get off the train of our own stories and just pick up another train, you know, transfer onto another train. And so I'm very curious about how you know, what your process was around learning that skill of being able to let go of a story and sort of skillfully adjust it in a way that didn't feel jarring or, you know, didn't feel like it took away from the valuable aspects of what existed for that story when it was skillful at the time it was skillful. So if you could share a little bit about that process that you went through, I think it would be very enlightening for us.
Sure. So Rahul, at this point, actually, it's I don't really have much of a process. It's more a simple barometer of, is this feeling heavy to me or is this feeling light? Is this serving a purpose in my life? Is it not? Why am I holding on to this story? You know, it's because, like you said, it is hard, and more than hard, it's scary to let go of something you've identified with all your life and, you know, to say, no, it's not that you're rejecting it, though. You're just saying, yes, that is a part of my life, and now I'm ready to find out what else is part of my life or what else is me. So you're not really rejecting it. You're just kind of looking for more because it's just feeling heavy. It's not feeling me. In fact, sometimes I'll write down, it's interesting you brought up resume, I'll write down something that about myself, and then I look at it, and it's just something, it's a lot of body feeling, like something in my body says, you know, is that really you today? Like, is that true? Does that ring true today, right now? A lot of our work, again, is very much about staying in the present, in this moment, in today, and not so much about what was happening yesterday or planning for what's going to happen tomorrow. Our magazine, for example, we don't even plan out like what's happening next month. I have no contributors for our December issue because we do it, literally do it month to month to month to month. We're trying to stay in the present because that's what works for us. And that was initially difficult for me. I've always thought of myself as a planner. I need to have a 5-year plan. But, you know, and that did serve its purpose at some point. But now, right now, that just started feeling more like a burden. It's like, okay, you know what? I'm not a planner. I'm a spontaneous person. That's what I choose to be. And like you said, Rahul, you said it's liberating. And that's exactly the pulse to you, is what feels liberating and what feels heavy. And it's scary when you feel empty. Suddenly you give away your stories. You're like, okay, oh my gosh, now I have to fill it up. What am I going to fill it up with? But it's also powerful, though, like Devin said, it gives you the sense of power to say, you know what, I have this, what do I want to choose? To just remember how much choice you have in your life. For me, that was what was exhilarating. It kind of takes you on a high almost. And I'm not saying that it's easy at all. It can be hard to figure out what is it that you want. But then to correspondingly keep in mind that it's all a story. What you're picking up today might not be true tomorrow. So, you know, to keep that in mind helps keep the lightness. Keep the lightness to say what I'm picking today is not defining the rest of my life. It's right now.
Yeah. You know, it just, what jumps out at me is how closely tied it is to this concept of, you know, present moment awareness. I mean, it just seems so aligned with the wisdom principles of like being here now, you know, and practicing mindfulness around what's real in this moment from our body and from our experience. Excuse me. And, you know, not holding on to the past and also not expecting that the next moment is any different, you know, or that what we choose this moment necessarily locks us into the next moment. It's just, there is no other time but now, and that's what's most real. So it's very interesting. Right. I mean, yeah.
And not to say that, you know, we don't envision or we don't set intentions. Like, we have intentions, for example, for this year of our magazine issues, our intention is to celebrate vocations. What is it that lies behind the profession that you choose? Or, you know, what is it that drives you? And then we came to an interesting conclusion that a lot of these things are tied in with what we do every day. For example, healing or inquiry or walking or cooking. These are things that we do every day, but these can often be the very reasons why you chose the particular profession you did. So we set an intention, we picked up these few themes, and we said these are what we want to do for the rest of this year. So once we set an intention, and then we let it go. We're like, okay, this is what we want to do, and we're going to do our best to make it happen, and if for some reason it doesn't happen, then that's how it was meant to be. So like I mentioned, our upcoming issue for November is exploring, so about people who like to be explorers and have adventure in their lives and what drives them sharing their stories. Now, what we do is we decide the format of our magazine is to have, you know, four storytellers, an artist, a poet, and a young writer. So we have about eight contributors in each issue. Once we find those eight people, we fully choose them, and we decide that, you know, now it's up to them. They know when they have to send stuff, so we don't keep, you know, saying, hey, are you done? Are you ready? Giving them deadlines. We actually don't call them deadlines. We call them dreamlines, because it's a date we have in mind, and we want to meet it. And we believe it'll happen if you can just do it with lightness and intention. And miraculously, it has, like I said, this is the fifth year of our magazine, and that has been our process since the beginning. Like, even today, I don't have two of the contributions I need for November 1st, but I do believe that they'll come, at the same time knowing that if they don't come, I will do my issue without that. And there's just so much freedom in that way of working that the product comes out beautifully, because it doesn't have that heaviness attached to it or the stress attached to it of, oh my gosh, I don't have this yet. How am I going to make it happen by November 1st?
Yeah, it sounds like such a very unconventional way of running a business and, you know, especially a magazine. I'm curious about how that, I'm sure that there have been challenges along the way of sticking to that sort of model around running the magazine. And so I'm curious around first how you guys came to the idea that this is how you wanted to do it. And second, if you have a story around like where you felt challenged and how you processed that challenge to sort of stay on track with that intention, I think that would be hugely insightful.
Sure. Like I said, most of our process has really been organic. It's been, you know, the very way Flying Chickadee started was completely, you know, it happened on a very present moment. You know, this editing this short storybook was so much fun, and it was so nice to work together and share these stories that we have to keep doing it. Let's start our publishing business and help others who want to self-publish. Let's put their books out there. So started with that intention, and then we were noticing that a book is a bigger project. Like, it takes time for people. You know, we can't be producing every month. And that's the other thing. It's like, you know, we want to share, right? So it's not like we're going to, Shahana and I both very much love to share, have an audience where we're telling our stories too, whether that audience is two people or 2,000 people, it doesn't matter, but we want to share. So if we were waiting for books, that was going to take a long time. So how about we, I don't even remember exactly how the idea of the magazine came up to Shahana, but we were like, what if we just do this month to month and we share stories of people who are our friends, our neighbors, you know, people at my son's school, or people from all parts of the world, and, you know, just whoever wants to tell a story will share it. It pretty much started like that, and then we didn't have any plan. We just did the first issue. It was fun. We got lots of readers who loved it, so we thought, okay, let's move on to the next one. It kind of started like that, and then we started having more of a vision. So for last year, we had a vision of, what if we presented stories of organizations to say an organization is really its people? So, for example, choosing an organization called Surprise Industries in New York and then saying, hey, we want to tell your story through your people. So having each of them share their story about what it is that, you know, brought them to Surprise Industries, what is their role, what is it that drives them. And then seeing that, you know, the organization started seeing themselves in a different light, actually, to see themselves from outside. So that was a really interesting and fun experience. Now, an example I'll give you of where we get challenged is in one of the issues. So our vision was we're going to do organizations. We didn't have 12 organizations lined up before we said we're going to do it. We set the vision first, and we said the organizations will show up, and, you know, we'll know which ones to do. And they did for the most part, but then there was a month where the organization we were supposed to work with, it didn't pan out, it didn't happen. And then the idea came up that, you know, from our previous 2 years, we've had so many entrepreneurs in our magazine issues. We'll do an issue bringing back their story. And that actually turned out to be one of our most popular issues because it was bringing the story of many entrepreneurs together. So kind of holding an overall vision and then being really okay with letting that go is kind of what has helped us, I think, keep going like this. And the challenges have been more with our own voices, I think, more than anything else, anyone else, just firmly believing that we're really accountable more than anyone else to ourselves. You know, am I doing my best at every instant? Am I doing what is feeling joyful, loving, and light to me? Just holding that at every instant.
Oh, wow. How inspiring. So that's your that's your story of transformation right there. It's very interesting.
I think my biggest one, Devin, has been to go from I am not a leader. You know, that was my story growing up, that I do really great if someone tells me what to do, but I can't lead as far as thought or as far as ideas. My biggest story about myself was I am so great when you tell me what to do, I will get it done, but I cannot lead it. I cannot do it. And working with this magazine and having Shahana have that confidence in me and hold that confidence for me has just, you know, shown me that we all can be leaders. We all have ideas. We all have creativity inside of us. And it's just a matter of finding it, believing in it, and just, you know, then just letting it go.
Wow, wow. Mm. With Service Space, we always quote Mahatma Gandhiji's one-liner, be the change you wish to see in the world. And how empowering and inspiring to get this from you, that you always have the thing from inside to start the change. It's a matter of transforming the story. So, and how well said. If I may, Rahul and Shireen, I would love to touch a bit more on that workshop that you mentioned, Shireen. I mean, that seems very powerful to me. So did I understand it right, Shireen, that the workshop is actually coaching the participants with the change in the paradigm or change in direction as to how you can actually transform the story or how you can become a better storyteller?
Very much so. So each of our workshops, again, has been organic. We've done, I think, about 6 or 7 workshops so far. I'm talking about the 6-week workshop series that we've done where, you know, the participants meet once a week for 3 hours. And then the only thing we've asked for is you have to come with a project. So here's the other thing that we try to do in our coaching is always have a product. What that product is, it doesn't matter. Like some of our participants have come with, my product is myself. Like I want to figure out what is it that I want to do. What is it that, you know, being myself, for example, was somebody's project or finding myself, something like that. So it doesn't matter what it is, but at the end of 6 weeks, you have to have something you're ready to present. So at the end of our 6 weeks, we always have a graduation event where participants get to, you know, invite whoever they want to share with, and then they present whatever project they did. And during the course of that project is when the, you know, the insights or the rules or whatever the things that Sean and I practice, we try to teach also our participants as well. And what's been interesting for us in these workshops is to see that if you, we call it heart-centered witnessing. So more than teachers, we think of ourselves as witnesses, where, you know, if you're really there to witness somebody get awakening their creativity that's within them, then you don't really have to coach that much. You just have to help them see and believe in themselves, whatever it is that they're working on. And then meanwhile, we'll have small things that, you know, Shahana, for example, has this really basic rule of every time you find yourself saying, I don't want something, you have to rephrase it and say the same thing, saying what it is that you want. So you can't have don't want in the workshop. There's no don't want. And that's
yes, it's like the solution mindset instead of complaint.
Exactly.
Go ahead. Sorry.
But that small thing really makes you think it's easy to say what I don't want. It's really easy to keep saying that all day. But then when you have to rephrase that with what you want, it really makes you think about it, and it clarifies a lot. So we have small things like that that we do in the workshop, which end up, by doing those small things, we witness how the participants themselves really find their path.
Sure. So you have done 6 of these workshops, Sharon. Would you share a few nuggets with all of us, just like, let's say, how do I go about shifting my thinking? And how can I become a better storyteller? If you would share a few insights from your experiences, I think it'll be very useful.
I think, like I mentioned before, you know, a good exercise I like to do for myself is drawing out stuff, you know, drawing out all my stories. It's one of the exercises we do pretty early on in the workshop is creating possibility maps. It's called inventing possibilities. So, you know, you take a situation that's bothering you, or you take a situation at work or somewhere else in your life, and draw out different possibility maps saying, maybe this is what happened, or sometimes taking the perspective of someone else and saying, you know, this is how I was reading the situation. Maybe this is how someone else read it. Like just drawing out different possibilities and then choosing the ones that feel right to you, that bring lightness and bring love and joy into the picture. So just kind of dreaming and designing. What is it that you want to tell? What do you want your story to be? So, you know, first, and we spend some time doing what's your story. So first, really becoming aware of what is the story you're telling yourself. What is it that you think you are? Or what is it? If so, again, here, this is where the having a concrete project really helps, because then we use the project to go about doing all these things. Otherwise, you know, it can be really broad and then you might feel overwhelmed, which is why if you know you have 6 weeks to finish a project and you know you have to present something, it helps you narrow it down a little bit. So we'll do what's your story, then we'll do possibility maps, and then we'll help you pick which one it is that you want your story to be, and we'll help you transform it. And we'll help you see, like I said, Devin and Rahul, it's been pretty amazing to see how you don't have to do that much. You don't have to coach it. We all know what it is. It's just holding the space, holding, you know, really holding the faith in the participants. The reason that they're there is because they already have it. Just getting them in touch with it is what the workshops have been about. So right now we, Shahana also does one-on-one coaching. So she has, you know, mentees from all over the world, really, who some of them Skype in, or she does coaching sessions on the phone or over Skype usually. And people see really great results and learn a lot about themselves through those.
As does
she. I think the other thing that helps is to remember that a coach is also always a student, because you're learning from the workshop participants as well.
Of course. Of course. You were going to say something, Rahul? Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, you know, I actually wanted to jump in on another thing that was coming up around the magazine, if we can sort of, I know we started down this track of workshops, but there was something that really piqued my interest around the the way that you don't do this planning. And as you were sharing the challenges, none of the challenges that came up for you were around the financial sustainability of the work. So I know that the workshops are done with, you know, there's a cost to the workshops and that you have sort of sponsors with the magazine. But if you could tell us a little bit more about the, you know, the way that the magazine has sort of sustained itself and the way that you guys think about the financial sustenance of the magazine, I think that would be really interesting to hear about.
You know, Raul, that's interesting you brought it up because that is something that we are, it's another of those things where we've never really, initially when we started the magazine, we thought we might do some advertising or, you know, earn some, like get some money through ads or things like that, but we noticed that neither of us was gravitating towards that, like finding people who want to do ads. And the one thing that Chan and I, our rule is that the day something stops becoming fun, we don't do it. So if tomorrow we decide, you know, this magazine is not fun for us right now, we are okay with just stopping it tomorrow. So having that, and we noticed that neither of us was gravitating towards ads, so we really haven't done any ads and haven't had a financial income that way. The magazine as of this moment actually does not make any money. We do sell printed versions which make some money, but mostly our finances have been through the workshops, through the selling of Shahana's books, and also we've had donors. People who really love our work have stepped up and donated money. But our vision is that when, you know, the money will find us is what it is. This is the basic way in which I can say it. And it hasn't made, Flying Chickadee hasn't made enough to sustain both of us, you know, on a daily basis. But at the same time, in these last 5 years, we haven't had to put any money into it. It has been sustaining itself. And we have some money in the bank left over, which to us, that itself feels great. We did write ourselves paychecks a few times, but it's been great, and we just hold the vision that the money will come when it's meant to come.
Wow. If only all of us could, you know, I love that what your guiding principle is following the fun, you know, like being a fun-seeking missile, really. I mean, if all of us could keep that in our work, I think the quality of what would be out there in the world would be so much different. It really makes
and
me
also,
want to...
Also, I just wanted to add that, you know, we do have the vision that we would love for the money to come. It's not that we don't want it, that there is a big, you know, we would love to have more of a financial stream. We would love that if this work sustains us financially, because Shahana also teaches music. She's a musical teacher, and so that sustains her. My husband works, so that sustains me. We would love for Flying Chickadee to become that, but at the same time, we are not focused on that. We just believe that, you know, when it's going to happen, it will happen, and we will welcome it and be very, very grateful when that does. So.
Right, right. Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, it's really liberating from the, you know, liberating to step away from the idea that money should be the driver, but instead money should be what supports this, and that the real support is that internal compass around whether this is fun and whether this is making you come alive every day, and then trusting that if you do that, quality of the work is so different that it'll attract those resources. I think that's beautiful.
Yes, thank you.
Shirin, I looked at the magazines. I looked at 4 or 5 issues, and it blew my socks. I mean, it's like I'm so taken by that. I'm going to read one of these now. So I'm looking forward to your November issue and then December. Because it's
Thank
you. So incredibly good. And what I'm liking about this is along the lines of transforming your story, each magazine is focusing on a theme. And then how that theme could help me in unlocking my creativity or telling my story differently. And I'm looking at your September issue, Shirin, and it's, I believe it's healing as creativity. There are a couple of quotes here which I absolutely love. And one is, healing may not be so much about getting better as about letting go of everything that isn't you. All of the expectations, all of the beliefs, and becoming who you are. That is very touching. It's like so meaningful. It's like just, I remain true to myself, and that itself is healing me. I love that. And another one that I have here is, the soul always knows what to do to heal itself. The challenge is to silence the mind. And this quote is from Caroline Mice. And that is so beautifully said. If you would just share a bit of experience, Shirin, from, if you remember about this healing issue, and what was your takeaway from that, editing and compelling thoughts on that theme of healing?
Yes. Devan, actually, for all our issues, the theme that we pick, obviously, if you're working on something the entire month, then you really yourself think about that in your life. So I feel like the healing issue was one of the more difficult ones for me, and September is also birthday month for me, so there was a lot of thought and, you know, a lot of things coming up for me as I was working through this issue.
Sure.
What happens is, once we keep an issue in mind, once we've decided, you know, this is going to be, for example, September is going to be about healing, we discover, we call these people as pathfinders. We discover that we find people who come into our lives who have the very stories we want to tell. So, for example, I think this happened maybe in September was healing, probably in July. I think maybe in July or even August, I had my husband's cousin visit us from Texas, and he was in Seattle just for the day. He just came to visit us for dinner. We hadn't seen him in years, and we had lived in Austin, so we knew him pretty well. And what we realized that dinner in August is, we didn't know a big part of his life, which was that he stammers. We didn't know that he had struggled with a stammer all his life. He had become, he called himself a covert stammerer, which is someone who knows exactly the sounds and words that they stammer on. So they are so good at predicting and substituting words that they can get away. Like, you, we never knew. We knew him for 4 years. We were in the same city, hung out with him all the time, and we didn't know that he stammers. So he had come to share that story with us. He told us how, after 22 years of struggle, he had finally found something that was helping him with his stammer and that was healing for him, and how he himself now, because he has found that, is going back to India and sharing that with people who stammer in India and helping them. So, you know, he had me and my husband in tears. We couldn't believe his moving story. And then I asked him whether, you know, our issue is coming up on healing, would you be willing to share your story there? And he was more than willing. He was really happy, and he became our featured contributor. And he has this really touching story. We called it When the Stammer Heals. And he has been so grateful that writing about that whole experience, it's, writing is just such a powerful way of giving away your story. Really, we call it giving away your story. The more you write about it, the more you share with people, the more you heal from it. You feel like, you know, it doesn't have that body turning, that attachment to your story, the more you give it away. Every time you write it, every time you go to an audience and speak it out, say it out, you're losing your attachment. You're giving it away. So that happened.
I think,
go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, Shirin. I think I actually found the story. It's in the September issue. And that issue is about healing. And I read this story yesterday night, and I love the highlights that are there. Like, and I think his name is Kaushik Valluri, right? Or Valluri. Kaushik Valluri.
Valluri. Kaushik Valluri, yes.
Kaushik Valluri. And it's like, I vividly remember the day my semester first stammer first took control over my life. I was in my 8th grade Sanskrit class reading a Vedic verse out loud, and I got stuck with a word starting with S. It took me what seemed like an eternity to get the word out of my mouth. And then he's talking about the fear that he had, but then this is an eye-opener to me. It's like, little did I realize that holding myself back would quickly lead to adverse behaviors like substituting words, sounds, and avoiding situations. In the long run, it proved to be detrimental to my self-image and inner psyche. By the time I was 22, I was a master covert stammerer, relatively good with avoidance and substitution. I faked my way around as a fluent speaker in many situations. Still, there were situations that I just couldn't win in. And this is a very inspiring story. And we'll make sure to send a link to this to all four callers, Shireen.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's so true. I mean, I could think of myself as well in many ways, that sometimes we are trying to justify something out of fear or any preconceived notion, and that could be hurting. And I have done it to myself at times as well. But that is so true, actually, that if you just connect back to yourself, accept yourself for who you are, and you are comfortable in that, it just starts the process. And that's such a powerful way of creating a transforming story.
Exactly.
Sure. And, you know, Devin and Shireen, before we go on, I just want to remind folks on the call that if they want to chime in and share a thought or a story, to again, press *6 to get in the queue. We've kept it in sort of fishbowl style format with just the three of us so far, but we really do want to hear your thoughts. And we've covered so many themes here about, you know, from transforming your stories to creativity to alternative models for business and the underlying inspiration of how to make that work. And so any thoughts or questions or comments that are coming up for you that you'd like to ask or share, and especially questions for Shireen, just please press *6 to get in the queue. And while we're waiting for folks to get on, we will, I'll let Devin continue. And you were about to share something, I think, Devin, from perhaps another issue of the magazine.
Yes, another issue that I absolutely love, Shireen, is the July issue. And the theme for that is walking. So how can walking help you in unlocking creativity and transforming your story? And I saw an interview with a familiar face there, Nipun Mehta. And Nipun has a very nice way of expanding on the word walk. And when I read that, I was literally like almost cried, actually. But he says the W in the walk stands for witnessing, which starts with nature outside of us. Then the A in the word walk, excuse me, stands for accepting things as they are without trying to change them. That calms the mind and lends insight into nature inside of us. And the letter L in walk stands for loving, which stands to emerge naturally. And finally, K stands for knowing thyself, a blossoming of a dynamic relationship between nature within and without. And that is so powerful. Would you share any other stories or any other experiences while compiling the walking theme, Shireen?
As you said, Devan, actually, Nipun actually was the inspiration behind this theme, because when Jana and I heard his, I think his convocation speech, which he gave in 2012, I'm not sure how we came across it, but a couple of years back we came across that and we were just blown away by it. And, you know, walking has just always been something that I have loved, Shahana loves, and we thought when we came up with the idea of doing vocations, doing a theme around, or doing a year of themes around everyday things, we knew we just had to start with walking. And Actually, this person, Nipun himself, had suggested her name is Nicole Huguenin, and she, her story is called A Call to Walk, and what she did is she has started this beautiful space called Wild Dream Walks, where she gets a group of people, you know, whoever wants to come can come. She's in, I think, in Colorado right now, so she leads a walk. I don't know how often they do that, maybe every week, maybe once a month, where she encourages people to share their dreams while walking. So they go on a walk, and they're strangers. Very often no one knows each other, but they start sharing their dreams. And as they share, they come up with ideas. You know, one person might be able to help you in some way to realize some part of that dream. Or while you're talking about it, some of these dreams you haven't shared with anyone. And so once you start talking about it, you yourself start getting all these ideas, and she's realized that it's become this beautiful space where people are opening up so much and loving the idea of walking and sharing at the same time. So she's taking her wild dream walks to different parts of America right now, and so her piece is really beautiful too, and I really loved working with her. It's amazing for me, Devan and Rahul. Like every issue, I feel like I get to make 8 new friends and, you know, meet 8 people from all over the world. Even though I'm not meeting them, I'm still sitting in my basement working. But the writing is such a personal and, you know, such a vulnerable thing where they're giving me their stories and having the faith that I'm going to present it in the way that they want it to be presented. A big part of my work is also coaching the stories. So I will, you know, once someone sends me a first draft, I work with them on the language, on, you know, often they'll send me like a really long draft and helping them edit it down to what is it that you're really trying to say without all the fluff. Like getting down to the shortest story that you can tell is a big part of our work, and it's been enlightening for me as well as the contributor. We end up like just becoming really good friends, is all I can say. So I feel incredibly grateful to meet all these amazing people, and I get inspired month after month to see, oh my gosh, how many amazing things are happening around us that we have no idea that they are. So yeah, Nicole's sure. story is pretty cool.
I know that, Sharon, you make 8 new friends per issue, but I'm wondering, and it's probably hard to choose from those, but I'm wondering if there's one or two that really stand out as something that that you'd like to share that, you know, just somehow are really different or really struck a very deep chord with you and rung out as especially resonant for where you were at the time. Are there any of those stories that jumped out for you?
You know, Rahul, in this walking issue itself, there's also a story called A Return to Home, and it's written by this person called Moni Dojeji, and she writes about walking the Camino. She did the walking pilgrimage many years ago, and her husband, Alberto, is an artist. They live in Ottawa, Canada, and I think a couple years back or 3 years back, I actually worked with Alberto, and we featured his art in one of our magazines, and they both have just, you know, their work has really resonated with us, and they love our work, so I think of them as beautiful friends that I've made along the way. You know, we haven't talked on the phone, but we exchange emails all the time, and you know, we're Facebook friends, we chat all the time, and they just have become people in my life that I'm really, really happy that they are in my life, and I have learned a lot from them. They wrote a book because they walked together. It's called Walking for Peace, and the minute I worked with Alberto, I had to order their book and read it up, and she lived in Seattle too, so we've talked about that as well. So that's been great. And then I'm trying to think, oh my gosh, there's so many people that I feel like I've struck deep chords with who have just, you know, stayed in my life, and I keep in touch with them even years after the issue has gone by. But yeah, Moni and Alberto jumped out, so I talked about them. But there's a lot.
Beautiful. Beautiful. It's almost like they transcend. I mean, they start out as sort of subjects. They turn into friends, and then it kind of become family, extended family in a way. And it's just so beautiful to see work doing that, you know, like going beyond associations to actually, you know, ties that turn into deep ties and even noble ties. It's very beautiful.
Exactly. And one of the other things I really enjoy is we have a section in each issue called Young Mind, Big Perspective, where I get to work with the little ones. And our youngest writer was 6 in that section, and our oldest one was 20, I think. So I get to work with a huge range, and I love, love working with the children. In this issue, in the walking issue, I worked with these two sisters, Alex and Sage, who are, I think, 6 and 11, I forget their exact ages, but they walk with their mom. They do all these amazing walks all over the world, and they walked the Camino too, and it's so much fun. It brings me so much joy to work with the kids, and that's one of my favorite things. So a few years back, I worked with a whole high school friend who's, you know, I lost touch with her many, many years ago and then reconnected recently, and her daughter, who's now, I think now she's 15. When I worked with her, she was 13, but we got to know each other really well because she wrote a piece in our theme titled Humor, which I worked with her a lot on it. And she was so grateful for my coaching with her writing and her storytelling that she has become a good friend. We stay in touch a lot, and even just a couple of days back exchanged emails, and I'm grateful for that. Like, I don't talk to her mom as much, but I do stay in touch with her, so... Yeah, working with the little ones has been a lot of fun.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it seems both of them have their own little story there, and the words are so touching, actually. So, again, for our callers, we'll be emailing links to all these issues that we are talking about. But both the girls, and they're incredible writers, too. And probably that speaks to your editing touch as well. Sure, but it looks so beautiful, actually, the story of both the girls. Hey, I have heard and talked and read about this also, that walking, when you focus on walking and not get swept by other worries or fears or any other thing, then it can be meditative. And it can connect back with the rhythm of life. And that walking issue is so incredibly well put together. Another issue that I loved, Shireen, is creative inquiry.
Okay.
And the part that I love is your editor's note. And there's a question here that I would love to expand on. It's like, now, does the universe want to be understood or explained? Does it not also want to be wholly experienced? That question just like made me think actually a couple of minutes before I would read further. So, but it's just a different paradigm for me. It's like when I'm trying to create my transformation story, maybe I don't need to explain everything. I don't need to understand everything, but just experience the moments, and maybe the answer will come from that. And building on that, there is a paragraph here in your editor's note. And again, this is the August issue of Courageous Creativity. And the paragraph is saying, an interesting arc emerges. Each story on the spirit of inquiry ultimately brings us home to worldless oneness. A departure from the left-brained notion of inquiry to reveal a holistic window into life's phenomena. Nowhere is this better witnessed than our interview with remarkable Dr. Jill Taylor. And then the interview and all that goes on. But would you expand on a little bit, Shane, like about experiencing things and not worrying about explaining them all the time?
Sure. So in this issue, we actually were so grateful and so inspired by Dr. Jill Bolt Taylor. We first heard of her through her TED Talk, which is pretty amazing. She has also written a book called My Stroke of Insight and has also been on the Oprah Show. She's a really remarkable brain surgeon who some years ago had a stroke herself. And was able to kind of stay, because she was a brain surgeon herself. Her book is just simply amazing. I would recommend it to everyone to read it. It's called My Stroke of Insight. And she felt like her left brain is where the stroke was. So her right brain was still active, and she talks about, even though she had no speech, no language, she didn't have much of memory, like she didn't know who's who, but she could feel people's energies. So she talked about, you know, doctors who would come into her room, who would not look at her, not give her eye contact, but just kind of, you know, do their work and leave, and how it would feel in her body when that happened, versus some doctors who would come in and really look at her while talking, engage with her, and you know, just the difference in feeling, even though she, like I said, she's not listening to their words. She has no language, no speech, but just those energies. And she talked a lot about wordlessness in her book and the experiences of that. So what was interesting for us is when they first agreed that, you know, we could interview her for her for our magazine, we were so excited. We couldn't believe that this is happening. And we sent off all these amazing questions, expecting, you know, and hoping for a lot of insights. And true to her word, her replies came back really short, just, you know, a couple sentences. In fact, our questions, I think in some cases, were longer than the words. And our first instinct was, you know, let's go and tell her to expand. Oh, my gosh, she said this in her book. I wish she would write more about that. So, you know, some attachment coming up to, wow, this is Dr. Jill Bolt-Taylor. We need more. And then taking a breath. And so Shahana has this rule in one of her books. It's called the 48-hour rule, and which is that, you know, if you find yourself getting really excited about something and like, too much, or like you start sensing attachments to certain outcomes, you kind of step back, breathe a little bit, and don't do anything for 48 hours and then see how you feel. So we try to remind each other of that and stay with that. So for her, we did the same thing. We didn't say anything for a while, and then we thought, you know what, this is like, she's just doing what she said, that there is so much power in wordlessness and in silence, but doing things with the right energy. So we're going to leave her interview exactly as it is and not ask her to do more, because we don't need to explain more. What she's saying is enough. It's exactly what she's meant to say. So that was a really interesting experience for us with this issue. It was also an issue where the contributors, none of them, obviously in most issues it's like that, in almost all of them, the contributors don't really know each other, and they loved the pairing, like they loved learning from each other. I got notes from two of them saying, thank you for including me with all these amazing people. I learned so much about what I do, reading through other people's lines. And so, yeah, just shining a different light on inquiry was really fun and really interesting.
Yeah, it's so much about experience, and I have also experienced it from time to time. And it's just like sometimes the moment forces on me to focus because I'm just so exhausted and I need to get something done. All I could do is basically just focus on it because there's nothing else that I can do. Then it becomes a blessing in disguise because then I am letting the moment unfold because I'm not swept by anything else, and it just works so, so well. And so experiencing the moments and making the most out of moments is another way of transforming our story. And again, for all of our callers, if you would like to share a thought or ask a question, you're welcome to press star 6. And so, Shireen, you are doing it for about 5 years now, right, with the magazine editing?
Yes, this is our fifth year, yes.
If you would share with us how this experience has shifted your perspective, like if we may go at the edge of your inner world, how has this impacted you personally while working on this and putting together such a beautiful magazine?
Thank you, Devin. It has impacted me tremendously. Firstly, just from an editorial standpoint, like I said, I had no prior experience with this. I don't have any educational qualifications for being an editor. So when I first started out, a lot of it was, you know, my own voices saying, what gives you the right to edit it this way? You know, how can you tell somebody how to tell their story? You know, you don't have any experience with this. So lots of voices, my own voices, undermining me. And, you know, I found myself always looking to Shahana for support. Like, do you think it's okay? Like, you know, I sometimes look at old emails and I'm asking her every single thing. And 3 months into Courageous Creativity, Shahana had to go out of town. And that was the first time she said, okay, I'm leaving. You need to take care of this issue on your own. And I remember this huge wave of fear coming up and just taking over me, saying, I can't do this on my own. I need to ask you stuff. I can't just edit people's work and things like that. But I'm so glad that she had that faith in me and that she left it to me, because after that issue, I haven't looked back. I just, you know, once you find that confidence, and like I said, once you find that joy in your work, you just, there's no looking back. I just started seeing myself growing in confidence with, you know, with just knowing that my intention is always to share the contributor story with lots of love. And since I know that that's what I'm doing, I started feeling more and more confident in striking out like 4 paragraphs and saying, is this really necessary? Let's not, you know, how would you rephrase this sentence? Just making statements like that became easier and easier. And then seeing how my suggestions were getting received and the amount of gratitude the contributors themselves were feeling was just amazing. It became this amazing partnership. And I just got more and more confident with editing. And I very rarely question myself these days as I work, and I see that my contributors are exactly the same. They receive my edits with a lot of love. And in places where we disagree on something, then I always, you know, it's the contributor's story, so they get to say what they want to say, obviously. And I feel that that very, very rarely happens. In most cases, my suggestions are always exactly what they wanted to hear. So that was one thing. Another thing that had come up for me was, you know, how am I going to do this? Like, I have such a busy life with both my boys and, you know, my elder son has autism and he has a lot of stuff going on. So how am I going to, can I be, I found myself always telling Shahana, I don't think I can do this on the weekend. I'm busy then. And this, and like, and just her holding the faith for me. And this is what shows up in our workshops too, is just holding space or just witnessing with love that, you know, yes, this can happen. I believe in you. It can happen. And then noticing how, in the past couple of years, it has transformed completely, where my personal and professional lives are completely integrated, I feel like, at this point. In our April issue, for example, when we were featuring organizations, in our April issue, we decided it's Autism Awareness Month, so we decided to feature my son's school, which is an amazing school for kids with special needs. And, you know, I got to do an issue for them, which they just loved. It's on the school website. They ordered, like, I don't know, a bunch of copies. And, you know, I got to work with his director, his teachers. His teachers have many stories in many of my issues, my neighbors, wow, my friends. So I feel like my work has shown me that, you know, it is very possible for personal, professional, what we so clearly keep putting boundaries between, there don't have to be those. It's very integrated right now, and I love that.
How inspiring. I mean, that's a story of transformation right there.
Exactly.
So you touched upon your son, Shireen, and how you are coaching him into having a meaningful life and all that. If you would share a little bit of insight as to how can we coach youth in taking on challenging situations, and how can we guide them in finding answers for themselves, I think it will be very useful for our callers.
Actually, Devin, I really think that he's coaching me. He's been one of my biggest teachers. Like, being his mom has been one of the most amazing things in my life, and it has taught me so much about me. With all the challenges and everything, he teaches me something every day. And by the way, he's like my number one fan. He loves the magazine. He can't quite read yet, but he wants to know every issue, who's in every issue. I have to show him. I order a print for myself every month, and we look at it together. He loves it. He wants to know everything about it. So that's always fun. But he really is my teacher. I don't know how to explain it, but knowing that he's here to teach me, I'm not here to teach him, has been the most liberating thing for me. And I think the only thing I think of as guiding him or coaching him is to be my best self. That's all I can do for him, I think. Or not even for him, but just for myself. And he'll learn by looking at me, or, you know, just encouraging him to have conversations with me. If I'm so joyful about my work, that's what makes him interested in my work, because he sees how much joy it brings me. And like I said, you know, our biggest thing is about unlearning. So he already knows stuff. I don't need to teach him anything. Kind of just keeping that faith and keeping the faith in the universe. Like, you know, when I was feeling completely lost about what's going to happen to his future and where is he going to go, we found this school, this amazing school that has been such a blessing in my family's life. And you know, it came our way, and knowing that the universe is looking out for me, there are angels looking out for him, just holding that kind of faith has been so liberating. And and knowing that he's my teacher, he came here to teach me. That's how
wow.
I look at it.
Wow. So that faith and hope and belief. And in a way, you are empowering him in that you are respecting him, and you are actually knowing that all the wisdom in the world is there inside of him. And so in a way, you are seeing him for his potential, and all you are doing is just try to be the best you can. It's very inspiring. Go ahead, Rahul.
I was just going to say that's such an inspiring perspective. You know, like, I in my best moments, I think I hold that about my 20-month-old daughter as well, but I think that the gift that you're offering your son in just recognizing that he's a gift to you, a teacher, you know, for you, is I think what I hear coming out broadly around this theme of transforming your story, right? It's that every moment can be our teacher, and so how do we transform ourselves to skillfully choose what we're saying and expressing about who we are as a result of where we are? So thank you, Shirin, so much for all of the inspiration and insights over this call. And I think one question that we always like to ask all of our callers is, how can we as a community, as a service-based community, serve you? What can we do to be of some service to you?
Oh, you mean to us, to our work?
Absolutely.
You can read the magazine. And you can, you know, create your stories, and just be yourself, create stories, get in touch with your power about how much you have the power to create your own story. And yes, and share your story, inspire other people. I would say read our magazine. You can help us by doing that. Join our community.
Wonderful. We'll definitely send out links to the magazines to those who have RSVP'd on the call. And we'd like to end the call in the same way that we began, which is with a moment of silence. But in this case, what we'll do is it's a moment of silence in gratitude for Shirin's time and all of the circumstances that have made this call possible and allowed us to have this wonderful opportunity to hear these stories around transformation and around Shirin's personal journey. So we'll just take 1 minute of silence in gratitude, and then I'll unmute everyone on the call, and we'll have an opportunity to collectively express our gratitude verbally. So first, just a minute of silence. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining. And everyone is now unmuted, so we're going to have the opportunity to, on the count of three, just say thank you, Sharon. And we'll end the call with that. So ready, everyone, on the count of three. One, two, three.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you so much.
Yes,
thank you for having me.
Call. Absolutely. And for all the callers, looking forward to joining you again next week. Thanks so much and have a great weekend.